The BS Report with Bill Simmons. Bill Simmons is brought to you by Lamisil AT Gel. It's proven to relieve the burn of athlete's foot between the toes. Once a day, 1 week, and you're done.
First of all,
this is the BS Report with Bill Simmons.
It might be cool, I don't know. And if it's not, I don't care.
The BS Report with Bill Simmons.
Bill Simmons works for ESPN. He's also named the sports guy, and he writes a comical sports column. He must be a popular dude.
The BS Report.
It's got a real dirty sound, like a rusty steak knife cutting through a well-aged steak.
Now.
Here's Bill Simmons.
All right, welcome to the BS Report, three times in 1 week. Also, I wanted to give a shout-out to our sponsor, Lamisil. Forgot to mention them the other two times. I'm just pleased as hell to have a sponsor. I like being sponsored. In fact, I'd like more sponsors. I use Lamisil now. I don't even have foot fungus, and I use it, so this is very exciting. The reason we're doing a podcast today, we're going to have Rick Bucher on next week, but I had a column that was scheduled to go up for today and had some technical difficulties at the house. And I don't want to call anybody out here, but three times in 4 weeks where an internet shortage in my neighborhood because of the cable system that everybody in our neighborhood employs. And I won't name the cable system, but let's just say that it's a cable system that a lot of people have had problems with. And I decided not to post the column today, even though it was about 80% done. I had to do some research for it that I guess technically I could have gone to Starbucks or something and or jumped on somebody else's broadband, but I was so unhappy by this latest internet shortage that I just figured you guys should suffer too. So you lost out on a 5,000 word column that would have gone up today, and now it's going to go up next week. But I don't know how we fight back, how we fight this evil internet company that keeps... Actually, it's an internet cable company. It's a digital company. And I hate them. And pretty soon I'm going to be declaring war on them. Three times in 1 month. Unacceptable. Anyway, so we pushed Rick Bucher until today. We pushed him up until today. And he's going to talk to us about the NBA, and we're going to argue about who knows more. All right, let's bring him on from ESPN, ESPN the magazine, ESPN 1 and 2. Is there any? Are you on ESPN 3? ESPN Deportes? What other ESPNs am I missing?
Isn't there an international aside from Deportes? Don't we have... I'm on TNN. That's sort of the Canadian version of ESPN.
How has HD changed your life? Are you more vain than you were? Do you worry about having enough makeup on, that your hair looks right, all that stuff?
No. I wouldn't say HD. I would just say being on TV a lot in general.
Yeah.
I now have people who are far more conscious of my skin tone and the way my hair looks than anything that I actually do as far as work is concerned. It's a little sad.
Is that a good thing or a bad thing?
It's not even a little sad. It's really sad.
Yeah. But I know, because sometimes you'll slick it back. You'll go Riley on us, and I get excited. I'm like, oh, he slicked it back. He means business this week.
I have not mastered the hair product deal.
Yeah.
I'm looking for consistency. And when you're doing a game in Detroit one day and San Antonio the next and LA the next, I can't believe I'm talking about hair, but my hair will do a multitude of things. And, you know, the standard is you want some sort of consistency. You want to look consistent. Even if you don't sound consistent, even if you don't act consistent, if you look consistent, that's half the battle.
I'm glad you brought this up, because you just mentioned how you do a lot of traveling. And this is the real reason why I've seized the conch from you when we argue about basketball in our emails, because you're...
Seized the conch?
I've seized the conch. Lord of the Fly style. I've seized the conch from you. You are now doing this... I don't want to call it sideline reporting, because it's actually a little more than that. What would you call the role that you have on these NBA telecasts?
Technically I'm a sideline reporter, but my role as a sideline reporter is different than most sideline reporters.
It's like an information sideline reporter kind of.
Yeah, exactly. They'll let me delve into what's going on around the league, or sort of background on what's going on with the teams that we're covering. So
Right.
It clearly is. But by the way, I got to ask, where's Steiny Moe? He was supposed to be part of this podcast too, if I'm not mistaken.
No, I dumped him. He's Steiny Moe's on suspension for just blindly defending this Jason Kidd deal. I don't want to talk to him until he comes to his senses.
I can understand that. Although you continuing to wave the flag for the Shaquille O'Neal, this is the part I don't understand. You were so gung-ho. What a great – I don't care if it works or not. It's a great move. It's a gutsy move.
Yeah.
What is the Jason Kidd deal? Forget whether they work or not. I don't see the distinction between those two moves as far as, hey, I'm going to make a bold move. It may be crazy. It may not work. Mm-hmm. But I'm willing to put some money out there and do something different.
Well, I'm glad you asked me that because I'm perfectly willing to explain it. When the Suns made the Shaq trade, they improved their ceiling from we can't win the championship with what we have to now we have potentially, if this works out, a chance to win the championship. When Dallas made the Kidd trade, I don't think it made them a title contender. I don't think it really changed what their ceiling was, which was they weren't going to win with what they had. Now I just think it's a fancier way of putting out the same team that had no chance to win the championship. Now, you disagree. You think more highly of Mr. Kidd than I do.
Yeah. Here's why I believe more in the Dallas deal than the Phoenix deal. And I would agree that neither one of those moves makes them the prohibitive favorite.
Yep.
But in the case of adding Jason Kidd, he at least adds some things that were missing. They needed a floor leader. They needed somebody who had confidence in the clutch. They don't really have to change the way they play to add Jason Kidd. With Shaq, you can't say any of those things. And Jason, at least earlier this season, demonstrated that he's still a viable player. I don't care where you're doing it. If you're getting triple doubles, you can still produce. You can still be an impact player. Shaq demonstrated nothing in Miami that would lead me to believe, okay, well, Phoenix is going to have to change the way they play, but Shaq is going to give them what? What is he going to give them that they were sorely missing that now makes them a better player? All I see is a guy who detracts from what made them special and made them good.
I'm going to throw this at you.
Okay.
I actually think Shaq's been pretty good for them. He hasn't been the problem these last 2 weeks. Like, he's given them rebounding, and he's given them somebody who can protect the rim. I think the problem has been this. We might be nearing the end of the Steve Nash era. I just think he's breaking down. I don't like the way he's playing at all. I don't like the way Rajah Bell's playing at all.
Yep.
And
yep.
I think that's been a much bigger factor than the Shaq trade. I don't think they'd ever admit this, but I think part of the reason that they made the deal and decided to slow down and go with a bigger guy is maybe they were worried about Nash. Maybe they saw some things that we weren't seeing right away, because I'll be honest, I just don't think he's been playing like a franchise player. I've watched almost every game they've played, and all of a sudden he's making a lot of mistakes and he gets killed by quick guards. I mean, he always got killed, but now it's like it's a landslide. Lewis Williams is killing him now. I mean, can you blame Shaq for that? I don't know.
Well, I agree with that, and I agree especially with Rajah Bell. And in some ways, my contention still is they were the best team in the league last year. If Nash doesn't get the gash on his nose, if those two guys aren't suspended, and this is the really fascinating part for me, if none of those things happen and Phoenix wins and they win a championship, the league is going in an entirely different direction. Now San Antonio is conceding, you know what, we're not athletic enough. We got to make changes.
Right.
And all the things that we've seen transpire, they just don't happen. And Phoenix is probably a happy crew, and you know they're going for a second championship, and maybe Steve Kerr never really takes over as the Phoenix Suns GM, because he really came in on the idea that, hey, Mike, you know, that style, it's really entertaining, it's a lot of fun, but it's not the championship way.
We disagree on one thing. I think San Antonio wins that series regardless of Nash getting the gash on his nose and regardless of that one get the Stoudemire suspension. I still think they were better. I mean, you can't tell me in four of those games they led in double digits in the fourth quarter. You can't tell me that they had a weaker team.
The Spurs. Yes, I can.
I disagree. I just think the Spurs had the best team. They're the best player. They played the best together. See, you just don't like Tony Parker. It all goes back to Tony Parker. You hate French.
I don't trust the French.
You don't trust
it's
the French.
It's not that I don't like the French. And I hate being put in this position with Tony Parker. And I know that Tony and Eva are probably, I'm not going to presume that they've heard, but if they've heard me ever talk about Tony, they know what my take is on him. And I feel bad because I look at him and I say, you know what? He's a great player for where they got him. He's made himself into a better player than when he entered the league. But I know for a fact that to this day, Greg Popovich does not trust him. And I know for a fact that inside that organization, they are always waiting for what's going to happen. Is Tony going to show up when it really matters? And you and I talked about this last summer, last spring after the championship. Everybody got all hot and bothered. Oh, he's the MVP of the NBA Finals.
Yes, yeah, stupid.
I'm sorry. He had a great series. It's a joke that he would be the MVP. He was defended one-on-one by Booby freaking Gibson while the Cavaliers are game planning to stop Tim Duncan, and Tim Duncan is still making sure that they win in a sweep. Did Tony Parker have great numbers? Absolutely. He should have had great numbers. I mean,
yeah.
He did what he was supposed to do. That doesn't necessarily make you the MVP. And I always get in this position where I gotta be critical of Tony, and I really don't want I don't want to be in that position because there's a lot that I admire and I respect about him, but people just go way too far in place. I mean, the idea that he would be better, he's not better than Manu Ginobili, much less Tim Duncan.
Well, he's definitely not better than Manu. Wait, we're going to get back to this. You reminded me of something that I had to throw at you. This whole concept of the MVP, I think we need to reinvent because, well, here's the thing that nobody can explain. So we have a regular season MVP and the voting ends after 82 games.
Right.
And then we have a finals MVP.
Right.
Which potentially could be the MVP of a 4-game series. Now,
right.
We have no way to account for what happened from rounds 1, 2, and 3. There's no, nobody emerges from that. There's no playoffs MVP. Historically, in 2077, somebody would be looking through an encyclopedia and have no idea that Tim Duncan was the best player of the 2007 playoffs. They'll think it was Tony Parker. Why don't we change that? How hard is that to change?
It's not that hard, but the fear that the league has, one, league is slow to change anything. But two,
I know.
This debate that we have, they love that. They love when it's in dispute. They love when there's, I mean, here's the other thing we could do as far as the regular season MVP is concerned.
Yeah.
Define what it's for. Is it the best player in the league? Is it the best player on the best team?
Right.
Or is it, if you said, it's for the player who is most indispensable to his team. It would direct people and you would have less controversy. I'm sure you'd still have some question marks, but by and large, people would be on the same wavelength as far as how they were looking at things. You could make a cogent argument and say, look, hey, Kobe's having a great year, but he's not there. Or Steve Nash is having a great year, or LeBron James is having a great year, but he doesn't fit the definition. And so, but the league is never going to change that because they like the fact that if people are arguing about it, they look at that, and I'm not sure I agree with this, they look at that as a positive.
Yeah,
and that's why
we have screwed up playoff seeds and why there's going to be a ninth seed with 50 wins. My whole thing with the MVP is this. I have a couple criteria. One is like who did the year to belong to when we look back? We'll look at the 2007-08 and say, all right, it was that guy's year. And then also, if you replaced the player in question with somebody who was, you know, an above average player but not great, how much would their team suffer? And for my money, what are we at, the 60 game mark?
Yep.
I think it's
yeah, right about there.
And I know Kobe's going to win it, and I know everybody's going to say it's his year and all that stuff, but you can't tell me that Chris Paul is less valuable than Kobe Bryant. You can't.
No,
in fact,
you can't.
I would say he's a little more.
I would wholeheartedly agree as far as a guy who's indispensable to his team. and this is one of the other problems that we get into,
yeah.
is that a guy like Kobe, Kobe was deserving of it a couple of years ago, just like Jason Kidd was deserving it over Tim Duncan.
Yeah, he,
a couple
Kobe
years
had
ago.
My vote in 06, which everybody
right, exactly.
forgets this year when they all killed me that I didn't like him this year.
Exactly. And so what happens is when a guy isn't given, like I'm hearing, you know, Jerry Sloan for Coach of the Year this year. No, no. I mean, he should have won one prior to this.
Yeah.
But there are no do-overs. There are no makeups. Otherwise, you continue to get behind the eight ball. And now you've passed somebody over again who deserved it this year. You need to look at it within the prism of this year. Now,
right.
having said that, to me, it's egregious that Kobe has been the best player in the league for what? Like, probably like 4 or 5 years running now.
Well, he's been the best individual player. I don't think you
yeah.
can call him the
okay.
best teammate
Fair enough.
And all that stuff.
However you want to cut it up.
Yeah.
And he hasn't won an MVP.
Well, look at Shaq Shaq only won one in his prime, and he was the franchise guy for a 4-year span.
Yeah. And look at Tim Duncan.
Yeah.
How consistent he's been, and it's almost like, yeah, well, we know, yeah, he's good. We know he's there, but
the MVP it's always been one of the most frustrating things, and this goes back to like, you know, they used to have the players vote, like Rick Barry didn't win in 1975, which was outrageous, and,
right.
you know, and then probably the worst one ever was, Karl Malone winning over MJ in 97.
Right.
So that was
right,
just,
right.
I mean, that's just stupid. You're giving somebody an award just because they haven't won it before. Jordan should have won every year he was good.
Yep.
You know?
That was a perfect example of what I'm talking about. Karl
right.
Malone got it that year because he was due, because it was time.
Right.
Because he deserved it. And it's sort of like, okay, but what about this year? Was
yeah.
he the MVP this year?
I think Jordan had the exact same stats that he had the previous year, and they won 3 less games. Like, instead of winning 72, they won 69.
Yeah.
But Jordan suddenly wasn't the MVP anymore because it was Karl yeah. Malone's year. Yeah, it's almost like the Oscars, where, like, Martin Scorsese wins for The Departed because he
right.
hadn't won before, so we got to give it
right.
to him. We feel
as if his work previously wasn't more deserving than the Departed.
Yeah.
But we finally need to get him in the scrolls.
I remember Dr. J winning 1 year. I can't remember. Maybe it was 81 or something for similar reasons. But, yeah, it seems like something. Actually, Larry Bird won 3 straight. And in 87, which was really his best year out of that 4-year stretch, I think they gave it to Magic. So
right.
it's always like, all right, who hasn't won it yet? And then the media gets involved. And I think that's what's going to happen with Kobe this year. He's going to win because he hasn't won before.
Yeah. No, I would fully expect that. And then you have the emotional thing of playing with the pinky and the tumult in the off season. And I would even say his performance in Team USA, as much
yep.
as it shouldn't count, that started the ball rolling in the right direction. So.
But we all have to admit that in the first month, and you and I have talked about this in private, that he has a way of being on cruise control, that he can still be really, really, really excellent.
Yeah.
But he wasn't emotionally invested during that first month, and nobody can tell me differently. I mean, that was somebody who was pissed off that he had to play with this team again, and
yep.
he was very controlled and passionless and just not playing the way he's playing now. You can't tell me differently.
Well, let me ask you this, Bill. Say the editors at ESPN told you...
I'm going to say yes to whatever this question is.
Say they told you that, hey, look, we know that we haven't been giving you the proper platform. We know that the writers that we're putting around you are not of the caliber that you merit. But hey,
yeah.
you know what? You're our cash cow, so you're not going anywhere. We know
yeah.
that Yahoo.com came after you, and we know that they're building a heck of a franchise over there. But we can't afford to let you go. So you're going to be here. Now tell me if you would be writing at your prime level for an ESPN that told you basically, look, you're our moneymaker, and that's the reason that you're here, and no, we're not going to invest in anything around you, but that's also why we're not going to let you go.
Man, that hit really close to home.
I thought it might as I was describing it. I'm thinking, hey.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you this. I think it's different than basketball because I don't need teammates And neither do you when you write. Like, writers do their own thing. They sit in an office by themselves in front of a blank screen. They come up with whatever they're going to write. I think in basketball, you know, you need a coach. You need a couple of guys to help you carry the load. You need a bench. And I could totally see why Kobe got frustrated. I don't blame him either. I mean, you know, the Bynum pick, from that point on, that was like a slap in the face. And it turned out great. But the bottom line is, they took an 18-year-old high school center when they had Kobe in his prime. Like, you can't justify that. But so I don't blame him for being ticked off. But I think you have to factor that into a quote-unquote MVP season, the fact that he didn't really become sufficiently engaged until early December.
Right. Well, there was an emotional hangover.
Yeah.
And, you know, but he got through it. And I'll say this. It may not have been – well, here's another factor to consider, because I'll be honest. I can buy into – well, I don't know for a fact that there was an emotional hangover.
Yeah.
I can buy into that possibility, but there's one other element here too, and it's one of the reasons why he got so anxious that they build a better team, and that's that he was concerned – that, hey, look, I don't know how much more energy I have. I don't know how much longer I can play at this level.
Right.
And I talked to Derek Fisher about this, and he said, you know, one of the reasons that Kobe is doing such a better job of utilizing his teammates is because he realizes, you know what, I need to have something left at the end. And if I don't do that, I'm not sure that I will.
Yeah.
And so that could be some of it too, where it was like, hey, I need to lay back. I need to find a way to get everybody else going, because I can't, I now know at this point, with my knee the way it is, with my shoulder the way it is, that I can't carry the load for 82 games and then have enough juice at the end of the year to get it done in the postseason too.
I think we've seen a lot of guys hit that point, because I know for a fact MJ hit that point when he came back after the retirement, because that's when he unveiled his little turnaround. And he basically was saying, I'm not the same guy. I can't drive to the basket and have 10 guys bounce off me every time. We'll see LeBron. You know, the interesting thing about LeBron is that he's so great right now, and he's really like nothing we've ever seen. And he's such an unfinished product. Like,
oh,
this guy,
you're right.
He has no low post game. Seriously, we've never seen him post anyone up.
And he has no mid-range game.
No.
I mean, I've likened him. He's a pitcher with two pitches. He's got a fastball and he's got a changeup.
I'd even say one and a half. Like, his changeup isn't even that good.
Well, oh, okay. It's streaky.
Yeah.
But even with those, with that one and a half, when he decides to go to the rack,
it's over.
Physically, there's no, you don't have an answer for him.
It's over. Yeah, and that's why, like, if he can ever figure out how to get that low post game going, and then if he starts hitting that 20-footer, I don't know what happens. I don't know where this goes.
Just imagine if he could take two dribbles and pull up and hit that consistently like Kobe does.
Yeah.
You would have – I mean, he is a guy, if he developed that and he developed a post game, if he used his full arsenal, he could score 100 points in a game easily.
Yeah,
easily.
Well, I wrote this this week. You forget, this guy is the exact same age as Kobe in that 63-point game in the Boston Garden. And and when that happened, everybody was like, oh, my God, young MJ rising to the level of the greats, and oh, what potential he has. That's the same age as LeBron right now. He's not even a month older, I don't think, than MJ was in that game. So for anybody to not realize that this guy is probably – what do you say, 70% where he's going to be? 80?
Probably. I'll say not where he's going to be, but what he's capable of being. Because that's my only concern, is that he's gotten so much so soon.
Yeah.
And I just don't hear enough from LeBron that I want to be the best player in the game.
Yeah, he's doing the global icon.
I want to be a global icon. I want to be the richest man in the world. I want to be all these things. You never had any doubt what Kobe wanted to be. Kobe wanted to be the best player in the league.
Or Jordan. Well, maybe LeBron is, maybe his sights are set higher. Maybe he's assuming he's going to be the best player in the league, and that he's already thinking beyond that. I'm giving the benefit of the doubt.
Okay.
I'm not
going to argue that. I just, the thing, and we see this, you can see it with a Greg Oden. I mean, the concern I have is, what if he gets hurt? That's really because of his physical advantages.
Mm-hmm.
That seems to be pretty remote.
Yeah.
But say he does something to his ankle, his knee, something, you know, a Dwayne Wade type of injury. And suddenly now he's got to operate on a different level. For me, the guys who become the greatest, even a guy is blessed with the gifts that LeBron has. You have to be focused on that every single day. You can't, I mean, look at a Shaquille O'Neal. As good as he was, as great as he was at one time, he didn't have the day in and day out focus. And I dare say that if he had, he could have finished as the greatest center to ever play the game.
Well, I think that the problem with Shaq was that once he established to himself that nobody could come to his level, he kind of lost interest.
What do you think LeBron's doing?
Well, from what I've seen of LeBron this year, I have not seen him take a game off. I've really bashed him in the past for picking and choosing his spots. But I have to say, I've watched him all season, and I don't see him taking games off. I don't see him taking quarters off. Do you?
I've seen a couple games.
Not like last year, though.
What's that? Well, not to the degree of last year.
Right, that's what I mean.
But there have also been a couple times where he could have played with an injury, and he just didn't play.
Yeah.
So.
Well, don't you think that part of that?
And look, again, LeBron is another guy who, I mean, his talent and his ability is so breathtaking. My only criticism, if I'm going to be critical about of him, it's that I look at him and I say, without question, this is the most gifted individual to ever play the game.
Yeah.
He is by far the most gifted individual. And I just want to see that realized. I want to see that maximized. Because
he's only 23,
it's not
though.
Maximized, it's a loss.
I know, but he's only 23. I think if you're going to rate him at the 5-year mark, I think you'd have to give him an A+ for where he is.
Yeah, I'm good with that. But again, you know, we're talking about here's a guy who's been given the keys to be the best player ever.
Yeah.
And are you convinced right now, without a shadow of a doubt, that he will be the best player to ever play the game?
I think I would bet on it, yeah. If you gave me odds, I would bet on it. I'll tell you the thing that's going to help him the most, and I haven't seen many people mention this, but and this is the difference with when Shaq was at his peak versus.
So you wanted odds, though. That's a little different.
No, I'm
you're
saying
hedging,
if you gave hedging. Me a yes or no, I'd say yes. But listen, though. The thing that's going to help him the most is that he's entering.
I think I just took the conch back, by the way.
No, he didn't take the conch back. He's entering his prime during an era where he's got all these young guys that he can measure himself against and challenge himself. He still has Kobe. Kobe's still at his peak. He still has, you know, Chris Paul, who's getting a lot of attention. Every night he's going against a good young player, Dwight Howard, Brandon Roy. I mean, the league's loaded right now. And if LeBron can't get fired up to dominate a league that's this loaded, then he's not going to make it as an elite player, I don't think. I mean, as the greatest player.
I'll tell you, as good as those guys are, the one defining moment that sticks out to me is when Cleveland played Portland and he and Brandon Roy were matched up at the end of a game.
Right.
And Brandon Roy is big for a point guard, and his is strong, and he uses that advantage against a lot of guys, and he's deceptively quick for his size. And he was no match for LeBron. He couldn't shake him, and he could not stay in front of him. And so I have all the respect in the world for Brandon Roy. But that, to me, just defined how unique a combination of talents that LeBron James has, because he took a guy who was an all-star and made him look
ordinary. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Well, and that's why it was such a shame that Kobe was hurt for the all-star game, because You know, I think these guys have been circling each other a little bit, and it would have come out at the All-Star game. I think Kobe's been, you know, nobody's more competitive than Kobe. And if that had turned into a mano a mano situation in the last 5 minutes, that would have been fascinating. Don't you think?
It would have been, but I'll tell you what. I'm not sure at this stage, if it becomes mano a mano, that Kobe can win that battle.
Yeah, you might be
right. I think he's a superior, overall, his basketball IQ, the different parts of his game, the way he can utilize certain situations, how quickly he recognizes situations. I feel like that's where he has the advantage over LeBron at this stage. But just from a pure, like, physical one-on-one stage, if LeBron really wants to shut Kobe down, physically he's got the ability to do that.
Random question. What position does LeBron end up at? Because the more I watch him, I'm starting to think, this guy might be a power forward.
Well, he should be. My feeling is that he should be a point forward, and that you should be able to use him in one of two places, which would just make him devastating, depending on who he has on him.
Yeah.
If he has a smaller player, a quicker player on him, you go post him up and you run your offense through him like that.
Right.
If he's got a bigger guy, he becomes the point guard, and he runs it that way.
Yep.
And so, I mean, that to me is the ultimate, and he's fully capable of it. He has all the tools. But again, here's the question that I have, and, you know, I know that you have blasted Mike Brown on a regular basis.
name me
a coach who could coach LeBron James. Name me a coach who could go to him and say, you know what, you need a post-up game, or you need to do this, or we need to run this. I'm just not convinced, based on what LeBron has done to this stage, that there is somebody out there that can have his ear.
I think two people can do it. Two people. World Wide West. And
who?
World Wide West. And Jay-Z, I think those are the two people. Hey, if Jay-Z becomes the co-owner of the Brooklyn Nets when LeBron's playing for them in 3 years, I think he's the guy who can convince him to do the post-up game. But
Okay.
LeBron's great, though. I mean, we've seen it with Jordan, we've seen it with Kobe, we've seen it with everybody. Guys on the summer, they add something to their game. That's what they do. They make it their little summer task. I'm going to add this one thing.
Right.
And if LeBron adds one thing to his game over the next 4 years, by the time he's 27, it's going to be frightening.
Oh, no, there's no question about it. And I'll say this. I was really impressed at the way he approached being part of Team USA this summer. He took an opportunity to watch and to work with Kobe and Jason Kidd and see what it meant to really be a leader and how – on the defensive end, saying, no, I'm going to check this guy. I mean, he stole that straight from the Kobe playbook. And I've seen him do it a variety of times this year where at the end of games, he said, no, I got Kevin Martin. I got Brandon Roy.
Yep.
I got Kobe. And, here's the problem. He's demonstrated that he can do it. You know, now the expectation is there.
I'm terrified of the Celtics seeing him in the playoffs. I'll be honest. I'm just plain terrified. But you brought up Jason Kidd, so we got to get back to that for a second. Tell me if I'm wrong here. Dallas is starting to quit on Avery Johnson a little bit here. Tell me last night at home, I know they didn't have Nowitzki, there was any excuse to lose by 20 on TNT.
I can't say that I know that for a fact, but I will say this. There has to be a crisis of confidence. Simply because when you overcoach, as he did by not playing Jason Kidd at that end of the game.
One of the great overcoaching moments of all time.
Along with what he did in Dallas, changing his lineup going into that series. Along with changing the tempo of how they played against Miami after game three.
You meant changing Golden State, that lineup.
Yeah, the starting lineup going into Golden State,
right.
Going into the series. But also, you know, the way he changed the tempo, the way they played. Look, if they had continued to run, there's no way that Miami could have stayed with him.
Right.
But he got nervous and he slowed down, and that just opened the door for Miami.
Could they be the team that falls out?
No. I would put Denver there first.
Yeah, because you fought. Because you were. How many Denver games did you do?
I became the ersatz beat sideline TV beat reporter for them. I did four of their games in 2 weeks.
How dysfunctional on a scale of 1 to 10?
You know what? It's not dysfunctional. It's simply that you have a talented group of guys who all believe that if I play my game, we'll win.
Yeah.
And nobody is sacrificing their game to make it work with the rest of the team. And George is of the mind, and he started this way from the beginning, that, you know, I've got a bunch of veteran crazy guys. I can't be mean old George. I got to be nice George. And so there's never been a level of accountability there that you need. And so, and once you go there, I don't know that you can get back. So that's the big issue for me. Defensively, they know they're not very good, and it's almost a joke that, hey, you know, when Melo and AI, I mean, I remember being in a shoot around, and Kenyon Martin made a joke about, you know, AI's guy running from the strong side to the weak side, and AI 3 seconds later going, oh shoot, and then trying to find his guy, you know, weaving his way through the lane, and AI looked at him and kind of laughed and went, yeah, that's probably going to happen. And I'm thinking, okay, you just conceded that you're going to be giving up the corner three on the other side. That is not the mark of a championship contending team, much less a team that in the West is going to stake itself a playoff spot.
Well, the good thing for Dallas is they have some cream puff games coming up. I think they have like 6 easy games in a row, and that might get them going. I mean, they might gain a little confidence. I think you're right. If I had to put my life on it, I think I would bet on Denver because they seem the most combustible.
Yeah.
But I would not rule out Phoenix. I would not rule
out
Dallas.
Yeah, no, I agree with you.
But the way Monte Ellis is playing, I always forget to do the Tay. The way Monte Ellis is playing, I'm penciling in Golden State into that top 8.
I am too. No, I have them there. It'll be interesting. It would be interesting to see Golden State and San Antonio in the first round.
Yeah, what do you think of that series potentially?
There's a part of me that if there's a team that could expose San Antonio's lack of athleticism,
yeah,
that's the team. And I, you know, again, here we go with Tony Parker, but Baron Davis could have his way with Tony Parker.
And you and I are the only two people that seem to realize that San Antonio's swing guys, other than Manu, have gotten awfully old and fossily.
You know, that's why they're playing. I mean, seeing Ime Udoka at the end of a game instead of Bruce Bowen,
yeah,
to me was a extremely telling sign.
And also, he's been good for them lately.
Yeah.
I actually like Udoka. It's kind of a size to him.
There's everybody. You look around the league, the Brandon Basses, the Ime Udokas, maybe to a lesser extent, a Jason McSeal. He's a little bit bigger.
Yeah.
But everybody, because of this small ball stuff, everybody wants a 6'7", 6'8 guy who's like 230, who can play inside, outside, so you can play that type of guy as a 4 or maybe even your 5. There's all kinds of that used to be the tweener position.
Yeah, and
that
failed.
You know, you had a hard time getting him on the floor. Nobody knew what to do with you. That's not what everybody wants. Everybody wants one of those, at least one of those guys on their roster.
Yeah,
and
Randy White
the funniest part is everybody wants that guy because of what the Phoenix Suns started, and now the Phoenix Suns are the first team to give up the ghost on him.
Randy White just killed himself listening to you talk about this because he was like 15 years early.
That's exactly right.
I think you need to think about my theory that maybe the Suns went away from that because they thought Nash might be starting to break down. Something to that one.
I will think about it.
Hey,
I can't give you more than that.
So if you had to pick a Western Finals right now, obviously you'd take San Antonio LA unless they met before then.
Yeah. I want to like Utah.
Yep.
I want to say Utah is the second best team, but they have some really perplexing losses.
They suck on the road.
And they depend on Andre Kirilenko to be consistent, and he's just not. And if you don't have him playing well, then you have no shot-blocking presence.
Yeah.
And Memo Occur is a little bit like Rick Smith, where you go, you know what? I need that one game from him. I need that one clutch game, and that'll put him over the top. And when that clutch game comes, he gets two fouls in the first 6 minutes, and you go, they're done.
Right. Yeah, I think you could be right with the Kirilenko thing, because they had a chance to move him, and they decided he was a little more valuable than maybe some other people thought. But even if they had turned him into Marion, I would think I would like them a little bit more. But the weird thing about them is how good they are at home and how bad they are on the road. Like, they're almost like an old school 70s, 80s team when, you know, teams would go 35 and 6 at home and like 15 and 27 on the road or whatever.
You know why that is? A big reason is, and I haven't crunched the numbers or watched them all that closely, but people in the league tell me it's because their defense is wildly overrated.
Yeah.
And generally, when you go on the road, your defense is what keeps you in games and allows you to win on a fairly consistent basis.
Well, I don't think that's far-fetched, though. It's not far-fetched because it's not like Memo Okoro is a good defender. It's not like Korver is that good of a defender. So, I have a couple last questions for you. Who's your finals pick if you had to guess right now? And who would win?
If I had to guess right now, I would say the Lakers and Cleveland.
Interesting. Yeah, that was my pick for a while, but now I just think – I don't think Bynum's coming back, and I don't think the Lakers can beat San Antonio without Bynum. So, all right.
That's a fair expectation. One of the other things I found that I'm doing this thing about, like, which teams people don't want to meet and which teams they would want to meet.
Yeah.
And a scout from the Grizzlies. Somebody in their front office told me that Pau Gasol plays amazingly well against Tim Duncan. Historically, has played extreme. He's terrible against Amari Stoudemire. He's terrible against Dirk Nowitzki, which I go figure that.
Yeah, he is. You're right.
But he plays well. He plays amazingly well against Tim Duncan. So I kind of throw that in as being the X factor, as far as maybe the Lakers still have a puncher's chance against San Antonio, even if they don't. I think they're a contender. I think it'll be an extremely interesting series. I think if they do have Bynum and he's in any kind of shape, which is a big if at this point, even if he comes back, then I make them the prohibitive favorite.
Does Chris Wallace get a championship ring or no?
No, you know what? Here's the issue that I have with that.
Okay.
He could have made a deal with Chicago to get Joakim Noah, Andres Nocioni, and Joe Smith for Pau Gasol. Would you say that would be an infinitely better deal than the one he made?
Well, you know, he's the one who overpaid Andre Nocioni with the contract offer, though.
I don't care about that. Answer the dang question.
I'd rather have that group, yes, than the cap space that they're never going to use because nobody wants to sign in Memphis. So, yes, I'd rather take the three guys who could actually play basketball.
Ownership in Memphis, because Michael Heisley lives in Chicago and he sees those guys play, said, I'm not really taken by that. But, hey, we got this deal with L.A. Let's do that one. I'm not going to defend everything that Chris Wallace has done.
Please don't.
But in this instance, he doesn't deserve to take the hits that he's taken for that deal. He would have happily made a better deal. But this was ownership saying, we want to save money. And that was the biggest expiring contract they could get.
Well, I'll just tell you, this is like Groundhog Day, because after he made the Vin Baker deal and he pimped it and then it didn't work out, he blamed the owners for that one too. So he's two for two. Sideline reporting, your best tidbit of the year. Your best tidbit that you haven't worked into a magazine piece or one of your website columns that you don't write.
Oh, man. The first thing that comes to mind that I just haven't used or said was simply Tim Thomas. And this just cracks me up. This goes to how cheap NBA players can be, even though they make millions of dollars. Tim Thomas wore Sam Cassell's, convinced the equipment manager to let him have Sam Cassell's jersey and wear it during the shoot around, the first shoot around of the first game that they were without Sam. And the reason he did it was less a homage to Sam being gone, is the fact that his older brother Tony wanted a Sam Cassell jersey, so he took it with him and gave it to his brother just so he wouldn't have to buy one.
Oh my God. And he's made $100 million?
Oh, I don't, whatever the number is, it's a ridiculous number. He could have bought 50 of those jerseys.
Yeah. I think he's made between $90 and $100. That's a good one. The Seattle situation. Let's do this quick, because I know you're going to go. Can you give me any rational reason why Stern has been so uncharacteristically uncaring and unfeeling about the people in Seattle in this whole thing?
Because they have not bent to his will. They have not shown any inclination. I mean, he made a big show of going out there and talking to them, and they've essentially said, you know what, baseball and football, they're more important to us than basketball.
Yeah.
And Stern, for, you know, as much of a lawyer as he is, can get very emotional. And when he gets emotional, he goes with the iron fist. It's a little bit like, you know, he just cracked on the magazine because for the All-Star game, we did the NBA image thing, which we really did, honestly, we did it from the standpoint of, you know what, it's unfair that the NBA takes so many hits.
Yep.
While there are things going on in the NFL and Major League Baseball that are far more egregious than what happens in the NBA, and happens far more often, but NBA is the one that has the bad image. So we wanted to do a story to explore why that might be. He was incensed that we might raise that question and took it as an affront, like we were saying that all is well with the league and at a time when all is well with the league, that we would be trying to dig up dirt. It's just, he's a little crazy that way. He's a crazy uncle.
You know what? He goes into milkshake mode. You saw There Will Be Blood, right?
Yeah.
He goes drink your milkshake!
He gets upset. Exactly right.
All right, last question.
Yeah.
Me is the Milwaukee Bucks GM. Biggest farce in the history of the league. Does it have a chance? Would you support my candidacy? Would you be one of the guys that I leak stuff to and then pretend I didn't leak it to you?
Well, you know the answer to the last one, which is of course, because that would just make you like every other GM in the league.
Yeah.
That said, sure, I would endorse it because I believe that, maybe you're not naive. I won't say that. But the pressures and the responsibilities and all the little things that GMs have to do that have almost nothing to do with basketball. I'll give you a perfect example. When I was covering the Wizards, I walked into Wes Unseld's office one day, and he was on the phone, and he waved me in, and I was waiting for him, and he was on the phone, and he hung up, and he said he was trying to find out where he could order sports bras for the Washington Mystics. That was what was occupying his time. Now, and that's just one little glimpse. I saw Billy King at one time. He was measuring the distance between seats in the first and second row, and they were contemplating whether they could put a third row in there. And that was way more important than anything else. I mean, I think Iverson at that time was on the trading block when he was going through that. So I just think it would be a valuable lesson. And I think it would be a lot of fun.
It would be fun. I mean, at the very least, if you're the Bucks, even if they win the lottery this year, do their fans even get that excited for Michael Beasley or Derrick Rose? Like, what do they have to get excited about? They just lost Brett Favre.
Yeah.
Listen, I don't think it'll actually happen, but I do wonder why the NBA doesn't look a little bit more outside the box. Like, you look at what happened with Cuban in Dallas, and he hasn't won a title. But at the same time, that franchise was dead, and now it's one of the five or six best franchises in the league. I just wonder why they always just get in the habit of, oh, yeah, we'll hire this guy. He used to play. Or, oh, we'll hire this guy. He's been in the office for 10 years. Let's give him the job. It's just weird that they don't think outside the box ever.
Because thinking outside of the box can get you fired and or can cost you potentially money. And they would rather go with the safe bet. Because it's all about it's all about the money at the end of the day.
Yeah.
No, you know, this idea that everybody's, this is the biggest misnomer, that every team is doing everything it can to win as many games as possible or to vie for a championship. It's just not true.
Yeah.
There are probably, I mean, you can even look at the Lakers. The Lakers have to be shamed into getting back into the group that plays for championships. You could name 10 teams in this league right now if they can be entertaining, they can sell a certain number of tickets. If, you know, the heat is off, they can stay somewhere in the middle. Hey, we're all good because the money's rolling in.
Well, look at the biggest casualty there is the Suns. They could have Rajon Rondo and Lael Deng and two first-round picks this year.
They could have had Sergio Rodriguez. You can't tell me that he wouldn't have been a good backup guard.
Yeah, and they're the biggest casualty of that. And the owner, you know, he would have lost money every year. So it's not like you can say, look, dude, you should lose $14 million a year because it's for the best.
No, but, it's his money.
Yeah.
I'm not going to tell him that he's wrong, because look, he's made more money than you or I have, right?
Yeah.
So he's smart about something. But just don't sell me on the idea that you got Shaquille O'Neal because you thought it would make you more of a championship team. You did that because you thought he would sell more tickets than Sean Marion. He would sell more merchandise than Sean Marion. And between not having to re-up Sean Marion and Marcus Banks' contract, he was thinking this is actually a moneymaker.
Yeah.
Our defense is going to be better. Come on. Just don't insult my intelligence. That's all I ask.
Well, I think the same thing happened with the Celtics when they were thinking about the KG trade, and the owner to that point had been adamant that he wasn't going to pay the tax.
Right.
And then they laid out this whole strategy to try to figure out, all right, how much money could we make from this? And quickly it became apparent that even paying the tax, you were going to make it back with all the merchandising and sold out seats and all that stuff. So,
and I think that's true with Boston, but I think Phoenix really screwed up, because if they don't make the playoffs or they get knocked out in the first round, then your season ticket renewals next year are not going to be what you thought they were.
Yeah.
And now you're on the hook for $20 million for 2 years, where you're not convincing anybody to re-up. And Phoenix is a very fickle basketball town. If they don't think you got the chance to play for a title, they're not, by and large, that community is not going to invest its money.
Well, and also you have, now they're going into the playoffs with Nash, who doesn't look as good, who's got the back. Grant Hill, who would have to play 100 games, basically, this season if they made the playoffs. I mean, if they made the finals. That's a little scary.
Yep.
Shaq. Shaq's broken out every year for the past, like, four or five. So, yeah, I mean, it's not good. But,
no,
yeah, all right. I'll let you go.
They've given away all of their scorers, and that's what made them special.
Well, I will say, though, I think their window might have closed last year a little bit. Because, you know, if they had made the Marion trade, I don't think they would have. They weren't going anywhere anyway, so.
I would agree with that, but I think they still would have had a better chance with Marion than with Shaquille O'Neal.
And with Rajon Rondo and Lael Deng.
And with those guys, too.
And three first-round picks to trade. All right, Rick Bucher, thank you so much. As always, generous with your time. What are you doing a game tonight?
No. I'm looking at the surf and waiting to get in and get a session in. So.
Oh, beautiful.
My wife was in the car with me, and she just left me. Screw you.
We'll give her a hug. Thank
you.
Thank you for your time. We appreciate it.
You got it. All right.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Yep.
Bye. All right. That's it for the BS Report this week. A historic week. Three podcasts. I think we broke my personal record, and that's all that matters. Plus, we have a sponsor. Next week, we're going to have Adam Carolla, who is either doing his career-defining or career-ruining performance by going on Dancing with the Stars on March 17th. We're going to delve into that, and we're either going to have Gus Johnson on this week or this upcoming week or the week of March Madness, so stay tuned for that. Until then, enjoy the week.
So I get to sign off.
Whoa!
Thank you for downloading the BS Report with Bill Simmons.
Too much fun.
Check out more podcasts at the iTunes Music Store or at PodCenter at ESPNRadio.com.
Peace out.